Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Steve Norman reporting. Emmerson Mnangagwa, who was fired November 5th from his position as Zimbabwe's vice president, will be sworn in later today as president, ending 37 years of rule by Robert Mugabe, who resigned earlier in the week. VOA's Mariama Diallo reporting now from the Washington News Center.
With newspaper headlines marking the end of the Mugabe era, Zimbabweans are already moving on.
What happened before is past. What we need is forgive each other and build this country again and bring sanity and unity.
The new leadership should create jobs and employment. We do not expect the new leadership to be corrupt. That would disappoint people.
Former Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa told supporters that he needs help not just from the Zimbabweans, but from everyone after he's sworn in as president. The international community is pledging support for a new course after Mugabe's divisive and controversial rule.
Mariama Diallo reporting. Myanmar and Bangladesh have signed an agreement for the return home of hundreds of thousands of Rohingya who had fled to Bangladesh to escape violence in Myanmar's Rakhine State. The development follows comments from U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, in which he said violence in Rakhine State targeting the Muslim Rohingya qualifies as ethnic cleansing. The search today for three U.S. sailors missing in the Philippine Sea since an American Navy aircraft crashed this week, well, it has ended. The transport aircraft was traveling toward the USS Ronald Reagan when it crashed. Eight people were rescued quickly and are in good condition. The rescue had continued afterwards. This is VOA News. Argentina's Navy is reporting an apparent explosion occurred near the time and place one of its submarines went missing. This is a development that prompted some relatives of the 44 crew members to say they had lost all hope for a rescue. A Navy spokesperson says the search will continue until they are certain about the fate of the submarine and its crew. A suicide blast in eastern Afghanistan has killed at least eight people, wounding 16 others. Islamic State, through its propaganda media wing Amaq, took credit for the bombing, saying it killed and wounded more than 50 people. The fourth Thursday of each November is known as Thanksgiving Day in the U.S. Families get together, eat hearty meals, offer thanks for their blessings. President Trump took advantage of the U.S. Thanksgiving holiday to speak to members of the U.S. Armed Forces. He applauded their work around the world, especially their fight against the Islamic State, also known as ISIS.
The fight against ISIS, it's coming our way. It's coming our way. Big, big difference. A lot of things have happened. They say we've made more progress against ISIS than they did in years of the previous administration. And that's because I'm letting you do your job. You're performing more than 1,000 missions over the skies of Iraq and Syria in the last 4 months. We're very, very proud of you. And believe me, everybody in this country is watching, and they're seeing positive reports for change instead of the neutral and negative reports. It's all positive.
President Trump and First Lady Melania Trump also visited members of the U.S. Coast Guard in the state of Florida. They took a Thanksgiving Day meal to them and then returned to their private estate in Florida to celebrate the holiday. The holiday season officially kicks off here in the U.S. That's when people go to malls and such places to shop. Here's VOA's Mel Arcega.
Retailers estimate close to 164 million Americans, almost 70% of the U.S. population, will go shopping over the Thanksgiving Day holiday weekend. If those numbers hold up, NationalToday.com, which tracks the commercial implications of various holidays and events around the world, say Black Friday 2017 could be the biggest yet.
Black Friday comes on the Friday after Thanksgiving in the U.S. China cutting import tariffs on a range of consumer goods amid pressure from the United States, Europe, and other governments for better access to growing domestic market in China. You can get more news at our website. Find us at voanews.com. And we're always available on the VOA mobile app.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today's Friday, November 24th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Former Zimbabwe Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa will be sworn in today, Friday, as interim president.
My expectation from the current president is to change things for the better. It has been a long time since people were suffering. I think from this point of view, is going to correct all the wrongs we've been done by the outgoing president.
The expectations of one Zimbabwean about the coming presidency of Emmerson Mnangagwa. A Zimbabwe analyst will join us here in the studio to tell us more about Mnangagwa, as well as the legacy of President Robert Mugabe. An English-speaking parliamentarians in Cameroon disrupted the National Assembly yesterday.
How many people will Paul Biya kill? You will kill us. You will kill us until you are tired, opposition lawmakers chanted, disrupting Thursday's plenary session at the National Assembly.
Let's report to Eugene Fongwa in Yaoundé, Cameroon, and Sierra Leone's Minister of Social Welfare and her deputy have been sacked. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's post and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Former Zimbabwe Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa will be sworn in today, Friday, as interim president. Mnangagwa returned to Zimbabwe Wednesday this week following the resignation of 93-year-old President Robert Mugabe, who has ruled the country for 37 years. There were reports Thursday that Mr. Mugabe and his wife Grace had been granted immunity, allowing them to remain in Zimbabwe. Mnangagwa has been Mr. Mugabe's second in command since independence. He's been accused of being behind some of Mugabe's most ruthless policies, leaving some Zimbabweans to believe Mnangagwa will represent the status quo. But Mnangagwa has promised to grow Zimbabwe's crumbling economy and entrench democracy. Here is a sample of the expectation of some Zimbabweans about their new president.
We are expecting him to take care of women's issues so that we also, if necessary, and be in decision-making, and also that we have jobs, our children to have jobs, because that was a very big problem in our country.
I think our president in the opposition, like Tsvangirai, you know what it was. He came in and you know which was there before. So, you see, he's got a light to see from wrong to right. He was there when the wrongs was being done by our previous president. So you can't expect him, no, obvious. He's a man of intelligence.
My expectation from the current president is to change things for the better. It has been a long time since people were suffering. I think from this point of my point of view, is going to correct all the wrongs which have been done by the outgoing president for the betterment of this youth.
I'm happy for the new president, the AD, Mr. Mnangagwa, for his commitment for this country and everything which was done back when the president resigned. It took us 37 years for him to be there, but we are happy it was done silently and in peace. So I'm happy for the new president, and I'm expecting promising things that are going to happen. Deployment, unity, and everything. I don't know his arrangement, but we can wait for tomorrow on his inauguration.
I personally still think that the struggle is not done. We have taken Mugabe and his unruly wife. It's symbolic. But Mugabe, the infrastructure, Mugabe, the culture, Mugabe, the ideology, Mugabe, the system, what I prefer to call Mugabeism, is still there, and we need to continue fighting. And for me, the fact that the military actually codenamed this operation Restore Legacy, and what they describe as legacy is that you must have fought in the war, you must be willing to do things our way, etc., etc. So for me, the legacy they are talking about is the oppressive system that they want to maintain.
The expectations of some Zimbabweans as they await their new president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, who will be sworn in today, Friday, in Harare. Joining us in the studio for more on Emmerson Mnangagwa is reporter Blessing Zulu of VOA's Zimbabwe service. Good morning, Blessing.
Thank you so much.
Well, let's look at the main event today, the swearing-in of your new president. Mnangagwa, what can you tell us about him?
Of course, this is the first time in the history of Zimbabwe that there's been an event like this. Remember, President Robert Mugabe came to power in 1980 after independence, and Zimbabweans, most of them, have known only one leader for the past 37 years. So today is very historic for the people of Zimbabwe.
The question people are asking is, Mnangagwa, who is he? Is he going to be the same or different from Mugabe?
People really have mixed feelings about Mnangagwa. Remember, he calls former President Robert Mugabe his father. The two have been working together since 1976. At one time, he was Mugabe's personal bodyguard. And some have actually called Mr. Mnangagwa a clone of President Robert Mugabe, or, as other political analysts have said, Mugabe on steroids. So some are actually saying that it will be more of the same. But others are saying because of the economy, Mr. Mnangagwa will have to be forced to reform. Remember, Zimbabwe is under sanctions from Washington and also from the European Union.
I was speaking to someone yesterday, and they floated to me the idea of a transitional government to take care of the economy. Have you heard that?
Yes, I did talk to a number of officials that are close to Mr. Mnangagwa. They've ruled that out. They are saying they are going to press ahead with elections in July next year. And this is also the same message that is coming from the Southern African Development Community. It's saying that they want elections in Zimbabwe next year. So the chances of there being a transitional government or government of national unity have been ruled out for now.
What do you think is the legacy of President Robert Mugabe? As you said, he is the, I would say, founding father of modern Zimbabwe. He's been in power 37 years. What is his legacy?
President Robert Mugabe, like you are correctly pointing out, is what some can call the George Washington of Zimbabwe. His legacy is somewhat conflicted in that, he came as a liberator. He was highly regarded by many people. Even up to now, many people across Africa regard him highly, and they were actually looking up to him. But the economic decline in Zimbabwe is the legacy that he is leaving behind, a Zimbabwe that is divided at the moment, not only across political lines, but even within his own ruling ZANU-PF party.
You know, 37 years is a lot, and there are many leaders in Africa who are also serving with such longevity. President Museveni of Uganda, for Nasimbe, Togo. Let's look at the way President Robert Mugabe, I would say, has fallen from power to that level. What lessons do you think some of these leaders who are serving long, for example, the Equatorial Guinea president, what lessons can they draw from what happened in Zimbabwe?
I think what's coming out clearly is what we in Africa say, if a corpse stays for too long, it will chase away mourners. It will not end very well, you know. Mr. Mugabe, for most of the times, really wanted to compare himself to the late Nelson Mandela. But remember, Mandela only ruled for one term, 5 years, and he resigned. And, up to now, he's revered. But the way that Mr. Mugabe is going out is very unfortunate for someone like him. And I think it's a lesson to many African leaders that you must leave when people still want you.
Listen, thank you very much. We're so happy to have you on Daybreak Africa.
Thank you so much. The pleasure is mine.
That's reporter Blessing Zulu of VOA Zimbabwe Service speaking with us here this morning in our Washington studio. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butter in Washington. Today is Friday, November 24. Please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is now 14 minutes past the hour. Chanting freedom songs, members of parliament of Cameroon's opposition Social Democratic Front Party yesterday brought business to a halt in the country's National Assembly. The lawmakers won the House to discuss the military crackdown on the ongoing revolt in the English-speaking region of the country, which has claimed scores of lives and displaced thousands over the last year. Eugene Fongua reports from Yaoundé.
How many people will Paul Biya kill? You will kill us. You will kill us until you are tired, opposition lawmakers chanted, disrupting Thursday's plenary session at the National Assembly. Most of them are Anglophones. For many months, security forces have arrested, tortured and killed hundreds of Anglophones to suppress anti-government protests. Others have been forced into exile. The internet has been switched off twice and several curfews imposed in Anglophone towns and villages. Joseph Mbandam is an MP of the Social Democratic Front, SDF, and one of the vice presidents of the National Assembly. He explains why they have taken their protest to the floor of Parliament.
For more than 1 year, this House has been meeting and behaving as though there is no problem, whereas we have continued to bury people on a daily basis. Before we came out here, we had to visit hospitals to see how many are lying in the various hospitals who were shot on their legs. And today, as we are talking, we have thousands of West Cameroonians out there in Nigeria and are becoming refugees.
Two of Cameroon's 10 administrative regions speak English, while the rest speak French. Anglophones joined Francophones after independence in 1961 to form a bilingual country. For years, Anglophones complained the union was not working. They were being treated as second-class citizens. The current revolt began late last year against the predominant use of French and English-speaking schools and courts. Activists wanted reforms, but the government sent troops. Now some Anglophones want autonomy and declared their independence on October 1. Earlier this month, Kavaye Yege Jibril, the Speaker of the National Assembly, refused to table the crisis for debate. The SDF staged a boycott. Opposition lawmakers are now trying to force the House to debate the crisis.
We have simply said that no work can go on here until we have found a definitive solution to the Anglophone crisis. We have said that this House will not sit until it is sitting to find a solution for the Anglophone crisis.
As SDF MPs took their protest to the floor of the Assembly, members of President Paul Biya's ruling party, the Cameroon People's Democratic Movement, walked out. Parliament was expected to vote next year's budget during the session. This is now in doubt. For VOA Africa, I am Eugene Fongwa in Yaoundé.
For more on the disruption in Cameroon's parliament yesterday, my colleague Peter Clotty spoke with Joseph Banezam, leader of the Minority Social Democratic Front Party parliamentarians. He says members of the SDF will not be deterred from their effort to put pressure on the Paul Biya administration to resolve the Anglophone crisis through dialogue and bring peace to Cameroon.
We are supposed to debate the settlement bill in order to proceed to the debate of the budget. And we, the SDF members of parliament, thought that it was indecent. It was indecent because one part of the country, the two English-speaking areas of our nation, are completely cut off from the rest of the nation. Schools are not going on. Businesses are not going on. There is heavy, heavy militarization of these two areas, and life is impossible. So for us to take it on as if business as usual, we said no. Parliament should debate on Anglophone crisis, come up with solution before we continue on any business.
Some are saying that your decision to table a new motion instead of debating the budget basically undermined the integrity of the lawmaking body of the National Assembly. What do you say to that?
No, well, I mean, people have to say something. It's not the first time we are trying to draw the attention of all the authorities on this issue. From the beginning of this crisis for over a year now, we have gone to them. We have written memos. We have the National Executive Committee have sent resolutions and so on and so on. And nothing seems to be happening. So those who are saying what they are saying is because they are not living what we from the Anglophone sections of the country are living. We are living hell. So it is necessary that the rest of the country should understand what is happening in these two areas.
Some are suggesting that you could have tabled your motion or your submission into the proper order of business instead of what they described as usurping the powers of the order of the day. Your comment?
Well, I say when you don't understand the Cameroon system, you would say that if we were in a system whereby procedures can be done in accordance with those laws of the country and so on, you may expect that.
Joseph Banezem is the leader of the Minority Social Democratic Front Party in Cameroon's National Assembly. He spoke with VOA's Peter Clotty from the capital, Yaoundé. Sierra Leone President Ernest Bai Koroma has sacked his Minister of Social Welfare, Gender and Children's Affairs and her deputy with immediate effect. A release from the president's office gave no explanation for Minister Sylvia Olayinka Blyden and her deputy, Mrs. Rugiatu Nene Koroman Sakin. But there have been speculations that the two were fired due to problems within the Ministry of Social Welfare. Abdullahi Bereti, spokesman for President Ernest Bai Koroma, says the president expressed good decorum at a ministry that is responsible for some of the country's most vulnerable citizens, namely the children.
I can confirm to you that indeed State House came out with a press release yesterday in which Sylvia Olayinka Blyden, the minister former of Social Welfare, Gender and Children's Affairs, and her deputy Nene Tuwe Koroma were fired by the president. And that, of course, cannot be divorced from the fact that the president will periodically review performances of his ministers he appointed. And if it happens that the confidence they used to enjoy is no longer there, as provided for in our 1991 constitution, the president will relieve them of their duties. And that was done yesterday with immediate effect. And Isaac Akabia, Miss, as the foreign minister who was a deputy minister there too, has been assigned to that very important ministry in government.
Well, I saw the press release from the president's office, but it gave no reason or reasons for Minister Blyden's firing. But what do you know about some of the information we are getting that the two, Minister Blyden and her deputy, were sacked over allegations of forged documents?
Well, of course, I can say for starting to know that the two ministers have been at each other's throats. They took the fight public. They've even been to the media. And Sylvia Olayinka Blyden is associated with a newspaper called the Awareness Times. And of course, the deputy minister, former Nene Tuwe, was on air in one of the local radio stations alluding that the minister had been using that medium to tarnish her reputation. So if two ministers in a very important ministry responsible for children, women, and vulnerable groups couldn't spend all their precious time to address issues around those areas, but rather to come public and exercise what I can call lack of decorum, I think the decision that the president took has been overwhelmingly endorsed by the public, that indeed it was timely, even though, of course, as I mentioned, the press release didn't indicate that. But what is in the public domain cannot be divorced from the fact that the two ministers have been at each other's throats over the past couple of months.
Is there something wrong at this Ministry of Social Welfare? Because we've also learned that the previous minister there at the ministry was also fired by President Ernest Bai Koroma for some allegations relating to fuel or gasoline allocation.
Well, that is the irony. This ministry is supposed to be one of those ministries where decorum could be exercised. The reason being they are dealing with the most vulnerable in our community, whether when you talk about mental health people, when you talk about the aged, people looking forward to that ministry.
Abdullahi Bereti is the spokesman for Sierra Leone President Ernest Bai Koroma. He was speaking with me from the capital of Freetown. The fashion and textile industry could generate nearly 500,000 jobs in Africa over the next decade. That's according to the African Development Bank, which launched its Fashionomics initiative in 2015 to revitalize the industry. However, designers in the region still struggle to grow their businesses. Lenin Ruvaga reports for VOA from Nairobi.
Mukadem Latif and Keith Macharia cater to a high-end clientele in Nairobi. One of their M plus K brand shirts costs as much as $200. While sales have been good, they face obstacles to growth.
Finding production houses that are A, affordable, and also in line with our vision and our quality. Also finding collateral to further our brand and to finance all the different projects that we have in mind at the moment.
Latif got a $750 grant from Equity Bank to complete his design studies. The funds were part of a $148 million line of credit from the African Development Bank to grow small businesses in Kenya. But young designers around Nairobi say they struggle to get startup capital.
Not everyone is lucky to be able to start without a capital like me, but banks cannot give you a loan if you don't have something to show them or you don't have security. So how are we supposed to do the businesses without capital?
Ruby Amondi started Style by Ruby 2 years ago. She now employs 6 tailors. A recent study found that Kenya's fashion and textile industry has the potential to create 300,000 jobs, in particular for women and the youth. Some entrepreneurs are turning to the internet to reduce overhead. Valerie Nyamwaya runs Afrivazi, a fashion website that sells clothes on behalf of designers. The site produces a monthly profit of around $1,000.
Having the online platform enables them to be able to sell their products without having to go through the process of setting up. And also expertise through Afrivazi, they're able to fine-tune their products so that they can meet international market standards.
African countries, including Kenya, have considered banning the import of cheap second-hand clothes to foster local industry. Large production houses do exist in Kenya, though the products are mainly for export. This kind of operation is out of reach for most local designers, at least for now. Lenny Rovago for VOA News, Nairobi.
Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, James. We begin with the African Cup of Nations qualifying matches for Cameroon 2019, where the Executive Committee of CAF, the continent's football ruling body, has adjusted the calendar for the day two matches of the Total African Cup of Nations Cameroon 2019 qualifiers. The decision by CAF Executive Committee to adjust the date is to allow the 5 African qualified teams for the FIFA World Cup Russia 2018, Egypt, Morocco, Nigeria, Senegal and Tunisia to take advantage of the March 28 window to prepare for the global tournament. And now to the latest FIFA ranking, where Egypt have dropped one spot to 31 in the latest FIFA world ranking, losing the number one spot in Africa to Senegal. Senegal, meanwhile, have risen to the 23rd position in the world, their highest ever position, and over 27th place Tunisia and Egypt to reach Africa's top spot. Egypt played one match in November as they drew 1-1 with Ghana in the final round of Group E of the African World Cup qualifiers. Egypt played one match in November as they drew 1-1 with Ghana in the final round of Group E of the African World Cup qualifiers. The Pharaohs had already guaranteed qualification to the World Cup for the first time in 28 years after beating Congo 2-1 in October. One of Africa's representatives to the Russia 2018 World Cup, the Atlas Lions of Morocco's coach, Hervé Renard, have been granted a contract extension until 2022 after helping the team reach the World Cup for the first time in 20 years. Hervé Renard's current deal expires in February 2018, but the 49-year-old will now be in charge until 2022. Elsewhere, Kenya's new Harambee Stars head coach, Paul Put, is optimistic that Kenya can make it to the 2019 African Cup of Nations despite starting the qualifiers with a loss. Paul Put has set his eyes on next month's CECAFA Senior Cup Challenge. He has forwarded a host of recommendations to the FKF, among them bolstering the technical bench with some Belgian assistants.
I did also my homework, and I'm from Belgium, and you have 3 players who have been playing in one team in Belgium, who are playing now for Tottenham and for Cycle Bruges and for China. So I know a little bit. If you are 12 years in football, if you're playing Africa Cup of Nations, then you know also a lot of information, you receive a lot of information. So I'm quite good informed. Of course, I don't know the local players. So please give me also the time to get in the job.
And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning. And that is it for this Friday, November 24th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you a very good weekend.
Hello, Africa. This is Peter Clotty, host of VOA's Africa Weekend show, Nightline Africa. Tune in. You will be glad you did.
Nightline Africa is a fast-paced, tightly edited news show designed to keep our listeners engaged from beginning to end. Nightline comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies: 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz, 19.2 meter band.